Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
To another wonderful of a hot intro. Oh yeah, I love Embryonic Journey, best music in the world. And I am Jim Christina, your host for LA Talk Radio's very own Writer's Block, and I'm sitting here looking at my charming and beautiful and talented co-host Bobby Bell. Sitting in front of with the book, so I
Hi, Jim. Great to be here this week. I'm looking forward to tonight's show, as always.
Oh, me too. Me too. Our guest tonight is, like, phenomenal. I mean, every time I think of her, I think best-selling writer. Best-selling writer. Best-selling writer.
International.
Best-selling writer. Words to that. I just don't know how many words we can get on before her name. So we'll throw in a couple adjectives, too. I mean, you know, why not? Let's just go for it. But tonight, of course, it's the first Thursday of the month. And with us, we have Mr. Henry Park and his wonderful roundup. Henry, how are you doing?
I'm doing just great, Jim. How are you doing?
Finer than frog's hair. I actually got my first COVID vaccination last Friday.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm half covered.
I actually just got finished being covered, last Friday. So I don't know how I got in ahead of you guys, but I did. So.
Well, I don't either, but yeah,
I'm still wearing my mask.
Oh, yeah, we are too. I mean, this is like, and they're trying to get rid of the masks here in Idaho, and everybody's going, no. Even the hardcore conservative right-wing Republicans are going, no.
Texas just opened up everything. I'm a little nervous about that.
Well, I would too. As a matter of fact, they had a gal that owns a donut shop in Texas was on the news with Shepard Smith tonight, and she was talking about that that nobody, and she knows nobody. She knows several business owners around her little town. Well, she lives in Austin, over by the university district, and she said that nobody is going without a mask. Nobody, even though they've opened everything up and take away the mask requirements, nobody without a mask. So, it's foolish. It's just foolish to even think about it. So, that being said, Henry, clue us in. What's going on?
Well, I'll tell you, when we talked a month ago, you might remember, or you might not, that I told you about interviewing singer and actor Trace Adkins about the return of Ultimate Cowboy Showdown, right, on INSP. Well, he told me that he might start shooting a new Western the following week, but he wasn't going to give it away because he didn't want to jinx the deal. Well, that new Western, Desperate Writers, wrapped just 4 days ago in Nashville, Tennessee, starring Trace Adkins, Tom Berenger, Cowboy Troy, and Vanessa Evigan. And their main...
Peter Sciarico.
Always the name above the title.
Of course.
And directed by Michael Pfeiffer. I better get that in.
There you go.
There may have been a bit of emergency rewriting because they were hit with an unexpected blizzard.
In Nashville. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was amazing, the pictures I've seen. Much of it was shot at a reconstructed town called historic Hollinsville Pioneer Settlement, which just looks fantastic. Hmm. And, speaking of Ultimate Cowboy Showdown, it's on Wednesday nights. And if you missed the first two, they're available at insp.com. Mm-hmm. Now, in film and TV, this is award season, which runs, 10 months a year?
Yeah,
roughly. Well, there are two
music awards every week.
That's right. The Country Music Award for Thursday. That's right.
That's right. That's right. It's like good wine, aged on the truck.
That's right. Well, there are two movies and a miniseries I'd strongly recommend catching if you haven't. News of the World, available on Amazon Prime, stars Tom Hanks and 11-year-old Helena Zengel, and she's been nominated for a Golden Globe and a SAG Award. The Score was nominated for a Golden Globe, and the Writers Guild nominated it for Best Adapted Screenplay. Just a terrific piece of work. Have you seen it yet?
I have not seen it yet, no.
Oh, I highly, highly recommend it. The Good Lord Bird, a miniseries available on Showtime, stars Ethan Hawke as abolitionist John Brown, and he's absolutely electric in it.
Oh, he's phenomenal. That's such a great series.
Isn't that great? My wife, who doesn't watch Westerns, is now watching it. He's terrific. Anyhow, it won the AFI's TV Program of the Year.
Indeed.
And Hawke was nominated for Best Actor Golden Globe. He's still up for a SAG Award, and the script is nominated by the Writers Guild for Best Adapted Long Form. And Call of the Wild, starring Harrison Ford in the Jack London story, is available on HBO, and the International Music Film Critics awarded it Best Original Score for an action-adventure thriller film. It's quite a picture. Oh, and on Sunday, April 11th, a new docudrama Western series premieres on INSP, Wild West Chronicles. It's got a great premise that you writers should appreciate. You know, Bat Masterson outlived most of his contemporaries.
Oh, sure.
And after he hung up his badge, he became a journalist. He wrote a famous series of articles about the outlaws and lawmen he knew, and those are the basis for the series, with Jack Elliott as Bat, tracking down and interviewing associates of the Daltons, Bass Reeves, Stagecoach Mary, Elfago Baca, and many more. Oh, and please check out the February March True West with my article and interview with actor Graham Greene. And you know what? You can read all about this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Thank you so much, Henry. Oh, I have a question, Henry.
Great.
My question is, Harrison Ford, isn't he getting a little long in the tooth to have a dog movie? That was a bad joke. I'm sorry.
Well, he's pretty old in dog years, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's old in human years. But he'll always be Han Solo, as far as I'm concerned. So they're okay.
To me, he'll always be Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All righty. Thank you, Henry. We'll talk to you 1st of April.
I look forward to it. Happy trails.
Happy See you, trails. Henry.
See you, Bobby.
Okay. Tonight's guest, she's been with us twice, Bobby? Once or twice. I don't recall. I still have this fog and the feud going from last year, so I'm not sure. I'm not sure where I'm at half the time. But she's probably written
30 books since we last had her on.
I'm telling you, she's a prolific writer. She's just a wonderful, wonderful talent and just a great guest. We had so much fun with her last time she was on the show, mostly because we gave her a hard time about giving us the wrong book twice. But, you know, she made up for it because she is a great guest. International writer, international bestseller. Please welcome back to the Writer's Block Myth, Catherine Hudson. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us again.
Hello. Hi, Jim and Bobby. Thanks for having me back, you know, after last time.
Oh, sure. Hey, any friend of Mickey's is a friend of ours. That's right.
I love it. Thank you. That takes me far.
Well, it takes pretty much everybody far. So,
yes.
I have to say that this was not a far cry from your last book, but it was a little different. Maybe a lot different. Some of the same characters, but the premise was like way out there. I not have a hard time keeping up with it, but boy, you really put some stuff in there.
I sure did.
I mean, this is a gal that just comes out of witch lockup and goes right back into a lockup again.
Yeah.
You know, she wasn't aware of it, but And then you've got this portal upstairs. You've got the gal that owns this place has got a pet monitor lizard. I mean, holy mackerel.
Yeah.
So if you wouldn't mind, before I turn Bobby Jean loose with her questions, give us a little brief synopsis of the story, if you would, please.
Absolutely. So we are talking about The Witching Vault, and that's book one in... I got you, Jim. I got you. It's book one in the Accessory to Magic series. This is my first personal urban fantasy series, because as I'm sure we've talked about, I also ghostwrite. But it's not my first time writing urban fantasy. So I like to wrap this whole series up as an apprentice witch with a criminal past inherits a magical bank that can speak for itself. And the clientele are almost as dangerous as what's inside their safety deposit boxes. You know, a pretty general, like...
That pretty much covers it.
Yeah.
I was reading reviews on your book on Amazon, and one person said, well, this is only like half the book, maybe even a quarter of the book. He says it kind of stops right when things are getting interesting. And another person said, well, it stopped. Now I'm waiting for the other book. So that's one you're going to sell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I am. So that's good. Yes. Yes. I picked up a little bit of a different way of writing with this series. It was very, very intentional. But the whole goal is to not give the reader any time to put the book down.
No. And you know what struck me, and I'm sure Bobby Jean's going to agree, is that it started taking on a dark tone very early. And it pretty much kept that dark tone all the way through it, with the introduction of characters in and out, and some people that you never really want to meet in real life.
And so
it was kind of a fun read, and like Bobby said, she couldn't stop reading it. And yeah. I think when you get right down to it, it's one of those that when you pick it up and you don't want to put it down.
Yes.
So kudos.
Thank you.
And, Catherine, we're not critics. We're here to talk about your book and your writing experiences. But we try not to criticize. Well, in fact, I don't think we ever criticized a book on the air. We've done a lot of criticism off the air.
No.
Never.
I think you just outed yourself.
Sure.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I am glad you enjoyed it.
We really did. And before we really get into a conversation, why don't we get a little bit of a little commercial out of the way, so we can do without the intro. What I'm looking for. I can't even talk. And I haven't had any drink at all. Oh, well.
It's Thursday.
Anyway. Mr. Ronan, if you wouldn't mind, this is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in the studio with Bobby Jean Bell, and of course, Catherine Huston, our guest for this evening. And we'll be right back after a little word from LA Talk Radio. Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you've ever thought that you could be a radio host, well, now is certainly your opportunity. Go to www.latalkradio.com, find the link that says be a host, and follow the instructions. You know, everybody's got something to say. And if you've got a show that you think needs to be heard, how about you link up with us? Because we've got 50-minute shows available every day of the week, plus Sundays. So how about giving us a try? That's latalkradio.com. And listen every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, for The Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio. And we are back. It is now 6:15. We are talking to our guest tonight, Miss Catherine Huston, who's just freshly moved from Vermont back to Colorado. Yay, yay, yay. In our time zone, Bobby. And I like Colorado, actually. I there was a second choice. Idaho was first. Okay, if you want to call and talk to Catherine, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. Again, that number is 323-203-0815. Okay, Bobby Jean, I know you're chomping. Go for it.
Well, you two have really covered so much already. The book is, it's a great romp. You just get started right away. I think, again, I'm someone as a reader that you got to catch me right in the beginning. And Jessica Northwood, who's our main woman, we meet her pretty early on. She's an apprentice, but she's reading a want ad, experience with minor organizational spells preferred. And, you know, if you're reading and you're not paying attention to words, you won't see that it's spells and not skills or right. something. And that was really early in the book. And I thought, okay. And the staffing company that she read this was the Westward Underground Staffing. And I thought, okay, we're in for a romp. You have... you write across so many different genres besides ghostwriting, and I'd love to talk about ghostwriting maybe in the second half of the show and a little bit about how that all came about for you. But I know you write dark fantasy, you write urban fantasy, you write grim dark. When I read about the types of genres that you write, could you just very briefly, like, what's the difference between grim dark and... urban fantasy?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I would say that the urban part is a different, and you know, there's lighter urban fantasy definitely, and then darker urban fantasy, which right. This book is. And that being now more days, I think the wider definition of urban fantasy is that it takes place in a modern setting in mm-hmm. cities of our world that we know and recognize, where there is a hidden magical underbelly that becomes exposed either through, you know, the main character already being a part of it or discovering it anew. And when I first heard about urban fantasy, I was looking at the definition, wondering what the heck it was as well, and this was years ago. And that definition that I found more often than anything else was that the setting itself becomes something of a character within the story. And I had not quite figured out how that would ever be possible until I wrote The Witch's Vault and the setting became a character, which was not originally intended to become a character with any dialogue whatsoever, but that happened.
Right, right.
And then Grimdark, for me personally, and I think it stretches pretty broadly across the board with other authors as well, I take Grimdark to be like, sort of just a, yes, everything is dark and kind of hopeless and like on the edge of you're not getting back out of it. Mm-hmm. And more filled with morally gray characters who make morally gray or even muddier decisions, and where it's harder to draw the line between protagonist hero and villain or anti-hero. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which in some ways, even the Accessory to Magic series may be considered grimdark at some points as well. Jessica Northwood isn't the best person, but she's trying sometimes.
Yeah.
And so it could go either way. I think there's a lot more humor in this series than most traditionally recognized yeah. grimdark books, but that's the difference.
There's a lot of humor here, and we don't want to give anything away, but you have mentioned about the location kind of becomes a character, and this, the Witching Vault is located within a bank business that has its own personality and is pretty funny. I mean, the dialogue that you write between the bank and Jessica and Tabitha, I really liked Tabitha her very early on. Would you just take a moment and tell us a little bit about Tabitha and maybe what inspired you to write her the way that you did?
Oh, yeah. I loved writing Tabitha, and taking her story where it went was difficult because I did like her so much. And I still do. And she has more parts to play in subsequent books in this series. So there's that. She, you know, I've always really loved the I don't know, crazy, free-thinking, free-spirited, weirdo kind of grandmother personality, where like the kind where it's really, like some people would say, this woman is far too inappropriate to do anything. Don't let her outside or talk to anyone. And that's basically, you know, what Tabitha is. And then I always try to design a balance to any characters that have like real incredible power. So, you know, for Jessica, obviously, she has balanced herself. And that is, you know, her checks and balances are her past and trying not to make the same mistakes. For Tabitha, who is a scryer, she can see the future, sort of. And she sees things that are important and then things that we have no idea what she sees. But being able to see the future like that is an incredibly powerful ability. It gives anyone a lot of advantage, you know, in any situation. And so my way of sort of tempering her incredible ability to see everything is by making her look insane. So, you know, who's going to believe someone who can actually tell the future and see it and know when they sound like their brains have been scrambled five too many times? And it's kind of, you know, a chicken or the egg thing with Tabitha. Does she sound crazy because she knows everything, or does she know everything because she just sounds crazy and no one tries to mess with her? And yeah. she was just a hoot, you know, like I wouldn't want to work for her either.
Oh no, I mean, yeah. Either. I felt such an affinity for Tabitha only because she reminded me so much of my own grandmother. My grandmother was like a crazy person. Yeah. You didn't like to let her go out in public because she always embarrassed the hell out of you and herself.
Right.
Whoever else she was around. I mean, she didn't have magical abilities, but she had everything else.
A lizard, too? She had a lizard?
That's so funny. The lizard Confucius.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and she's, you know, she doesn't get Jessica's name right. She calls her every other kind of name that starts with a J. Right. And in the beginning of that, I thought, oh, yeah, we all know folks like that. And then I thought, you know, is she trying to, she's really sharp and she's purposely, you know, she's trying to kind of get an idea of what's this Jessica all about and push her buttons a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I was left with all kinds of questions about the real Tabitha.
You know? Well, then she said, no, it's Jessica. She goes, yeah, Jennifer, Jessica, whatever. But what I really like the conversation with the two of them when she goes, well, what have you been up to? And Jessica says, well, you know, you read my mind. She goes, well, I didn't read all of it. just a little bit.
Yeah, that's all very fun. And sense of humor. And it was fun to have humor sprinkled. We have some moments. We have quite a battle eventually that I could not follow. I mean, I had to read, you know, I think it was 4 a.m. when I finally said, okay, I think we're through that.
Oh, that's normal. That's normal, Catherine.
Yeah. 4 a.m. Oh, my God.
But the character, it's very witty. It's really a fun read. Don't you think, Jim? It's just a really fun read.
It's one of those books that you kind of can believe what's going on. You kind of have to suspend your belief, and you kind of buy into the whole story.
Yeah.
And I bought into the whole story.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of believe in magic anyway, so. It kind of helped me along, but yeah, it's a suspend your belief and read the book and shut up. And you know, it's a great story. It really, truly is. Well, Jim, you just proved it again.
Do you think that we're able to suspend? You and I have also read lots of things with other worlds, and where the very creative writer has put us someplace with nothing that we can really relate to. Human emotion, yes, but other things. And here, like you were saying, we can touch and feel everything. There's nothing.
Everything.
You know, even from the description of the interior of this, when we meet this building, and Tabitha's not the best housekeeper, but you're so detailed in what you share, and it's all familiar. We've all, you know, we've all seen the teacup that sat there for however long, or now a lizard running around, that's a little different, and yet we know what that lizard is. You haven't created something that we have to really stretch our imagination to try to, you know, imagine. And I think that was also, for me, very successful as a reader, because I didn't have to work real hard.
No, a lizard is a lizard, you know, that's pretty much it.
Until it's not. But then, you know, what are you going to do?
But, you know, I mean, from the moment Jessica walked into that store, you could smell the must, and you could smell the old. And it was like, oh, yeah. And it's like, holy mackerel. This reminds me of a bookstore downtown New York City, or in the village, you know, the old musty books, and it smells, and they never dust, and it's just like, whoa.
You might turn away, you might turn around and run, except you need a job, and you need, you know, there's not a lot of openings for you. So,
and as Jessica says, the opening line of the book, Bobby Jean, and you've said this before, that's got to grab you. Well, the opening line in this book was, and I quote, "This was probably a terrible idea, but it wasn't like she had a choice." So there you have it.
That's a good one. That's a pretty good one.
It's a great line. So, well, I was impressed with the book, and I'm still impressed with you.
Oh,
you're welcome. So, as Bobby Jean was talking, you were a ghostwriter. But what got you into the dark spells and the occult? What brought you to that genre?
My soul.
Are you Wiccan?
I am eclectic, pagan, Wiccan. Mash it all up.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've always loved reading that kind of stuff. I've always loved writing it. I've always loved watching occult shows. Maybe leading more towards magic and less like, you know, horror, though I do enjoy horror very much, and I do enjoy occult horror. I've just always loved it. It's one of those things where, you know, I try to compartmentalize my dark side and my light side. And so all the dark stuff, the really, really, really dark stuff, goes into my books so I can keep the good stuff for my own personal real life.
In my life, I've known several Wiccans. And as a matter of fact, years and years and years ago, I used to date the, she was the high priestess of the LA coven.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah, she was a very strange woman. But she was cool. I mean, she was also an airline stewardess, so figure.
I mean, you know, people are people, man.
You guys are normal.
There are a lot of weird people out there who aren't
just, I mean, walking around with a bag of runes and stuff, you know. I mean, you know. So, you tell your future here, let me throw my runes. Hey, no worries. Okay, you're listening to LA Talk Radio and the writer's block. I'll throw my runes, you don't stop it. And we'll be back in just a few minutes, right after a brief word from Out West.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Wow, and that's it's now 6:30, and we're in the studio with Bobby Jean Bell and, of course, our guest tonight, Catherine Hudson. And we were talking about throwing runes just a few minutes ago.
I think you just created for Catherine an idea for a character in an upcoming.
I just got that.
That character just already exists in my mind. So
yeah, well, I was going to say.
I'm with Bobby, and I'd kind of like to know how you got into ghostwriting.
Yeah.
If you wouldn't mind.
No, of course. I thought we had talked about this the last couple of times I was on the show.
Well, but we pick up new listeners.
Oh, excellent. Good. I always love to share with new listeners. That's wonderful. So I had actually, excuse me, I stumbled upon a webinar that was being offered by a marketing company that I had kind of been vetting, I suppose, for a while to see how they did things. And the name of the webinar was how to make six figures writing fiction. Excuse me. And I wondered how that was possible and, you know, what kind of gimmick is this? And so I signed up for the free webinar, and it was about an hour and a half. Listened through the whole thing, watched the slideshow presentation that was part of it, and the numbers that were presented in this webinar were actually way, way higher than I had ever thought. You know, I never really stopped to consider ghostwriting. I knew that it was done, but as a career, like for fiction, I had no idea that that existed. And so at the end of the webinar, there was an opportunity to apply for a ghostwriting boot camp that was run by the person who gave the webinar. And so I signed up right away, and I, you know, applied, and I was accepted. In all honesty, I really hustled my butt off to get into this program. And find a way to come to an agreement with the person who is providing this boot camp program to work with me on the pricing. Because at the time, it was something that, you know, I just couldn't afford, but I really, really wanted to do this. And I had a feeling that, A, I would excel at it, and B, it would open up doors for me. So it was about 3 weeks back and forth of emailing with this person, and I was sure 100%. That it was going to go nowhere. He kept giving me recommendations to, you know, try getting funding from here, what have you. And none of it worked out for me. So I kept coming back to him with, well, how about this? How about we do this? I'm willing to do this. And we finally came to an agreement, which was incredible. So that was one of the first real experiences I've had in a professional capacity of, you know, putting my best foot forward consistently and saying, no, I promise I can do this. Let's find out how to make it work. And so I started this ghostwriting bootcamp sort of program where the majority of it was this person was teaching about, you know, how to make freelance profiles as a ghostwriter and how to market and sell yourself as a ghostwriter and your skills. Because really, you know, signing non-disclosure agreements, you can't exactly say, these are all the books I've written, go check me out. But then he also provided the students with work. So he, you know, was like sort of like an agent, set us up with clients and would negotiate rates for us. And it was a 12-month program. I went through the entire thing and was on my own working with external clients, and my schedule was completely booked up within the first 6 months. So it went really quickly. And then I was just even more convinced that this was something I was meant to do. So I kept writing. I remember my very first big project was it was paranormal romance, which is when I discovered that that is not something I can do in the capacity that that client wanted me to do it in. And it was to have an 80,000 word book completed in a month. And when I signed that contract and finished the agreement with this client, I was like, oh my gosh, what have I done? Like, I don't even know if I can write 80,000
words in 30 days.
Yeah, in 30 days. Oh, is that, are you surprised? Because maybe I shouldn't tell you what I do now.
Oh, you no, I remember, way I, over that now. I remember you saying before when you were on what you do now.
Yeah.
Still, when you're still, ghostwriting is a little different in that it's not your words, it's not your story. Is you're doing it for someone else and they have to approve everything you do. That's gotta be a drag on you as a ghostwriter.
Well, there's definitely a learning curve. I'll say that. Well, and I learned beyond a shadow of a doubt that I don't do paranormal romance. romance at all. I can put romantic plots into any other genre. I'm not sure that writing purely romance as a driving factor is up my alley, and that's okay. But I started that, and then, you know, now though it's at the point where I've been with one very large client for the last year and a half, and I've been writing consistently for them for that long, and the majority of my books are for them. And that is who I started writing urban fantasy for. They asked me at the very beginning if I could do urban fantasy, and I said, well, I've never tried it, but I'm willing to. And there was I did have to let go of a lot of my own preconceived notions about what, in quote, good fiction is.
Sure.
And I had to put aside, you know, my kind of pride. There may be another better word for it, but I guess my attachments to certain things that I honestly would never write myself in my own books. Not that they were bad, or not that I was going against my own values, but just, oh, I would not write it this way. And then once I was able to reframe my mind around that, adapting anyone's voice and style is just a second nature thing to me now. And I did discover that I have a knack for urban fantasy. All of this client's urban fantasy books that I've written with them have been bestsellers and beyond. I figured, I guess I have something here. So I might as well, tuck this into my own work. And it is my most successful series by 1,000%, maybe.
Wow.
When you ghostwrite a piece, and you just touched on it a little bit, I assume that authors kind of have their own voice. Mm-hmm. You know, if you like you like Stephen King, you can begin to hear his voice. You know, there's so when you have to kind of put your voice aside, I would imagine, so that a reader who's reading you and loves you and what you write now picks up something that you've ghostwritten wouldn't be able to go, you know, this feels familiar. So that has to be a bit of a challenge, which I think you just touched on a bit. These books that you've so successfully ghostwritten, when they do really well, how do you feel? Like an author, often we hear them talk about, you know, these are like my children, and don't ask me what's my favorite one, because it's always going to be the one I've just finished, you know, or the one that I'm working on. These books that you've created, do you have a different relationship with them emotionally? Is that a good question?
No, that's wonderful. Yeah, no, that's a great question. There's definitely a different relationship with ghostwritten books. Absolutely. My top priority always is to deliver good story, bottom line, excuse me. And then, you know, there are definitely books and series that I have ghostwritten that I enjoy far more than others, that I'm more proud of in a way because of how, just how much fun they were. And like, oh, wow, this is a genius idea. And I ran with it. And it's at the point now where with my clients, I've been with them for so long, all of them, actually, I've been with them for all of my different clients for quite some time, that I now have pretty much free rein to write the stories I want to write and take the worlds and the plots and the characters in any direction I want to take them, because I have learned the parameters within which these sure. authors write their books. And so that's been really fun. And it's actually really freeing and wonderful because I, my name's not attached to it. So, you know, if someone doesn't like it, well, that's not my name. And, but, you know, most of the time readers are liking it because I am writing what my clients' readers want.
Right.
I've learned that, how to do that. And I don't have to mess with editing. I don't have to mess with covers. I don't have to deal with any service providers. I don't have to do with marketing, whatever. I just write the book and I don't have to wait for royalty payouts either. So, all those things, you know, put together, it's become a business for me. In October of 2019, my husband was able to stop working and be a stay-at-home dad because of my ghostwriting career at that point, which is actually just continued to improve since then, and has helped me fund more and more and more investments into my own books. And eventually the goal is to cut back on the ghostwriting and make the same income from my own books, which will happen. Just a matter of time.
Yeah. Eventually. You know, I kind of equate it with writing a book with another writer. It's kind of like you have to set yourself aside. And you have to go with the flow of what is being written by another writer. And then you have to match that. And that's, I think that was, I wrote a book with Richard Polinelli. And I think the hardest thing was making everything blend. So you couldn't tell who had written what. And we managed to do it. But boy, it was some work. I had never done anything that hard before. It was hard.
I would imagine that that's even harder than ghostwriting. I've never co-written anything with anyone. I am working on that. I'm in the middle of that. That's a secret for later.
Well, let's just, we had a minute, but let's just go ahead and get into the commercial and then we'll come back. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block, and we'll be back with you right after this brief word from Creative Edge.
Hi, Jim Christina from The Writer's Block here with some great big news. If you're an author or aspiring to be one, then you better check this out. Creative Edge, one of Canada's top boutique publicity firms for authors, is now expanding. They are dedicating themselves to promoting authors, indie and traditional, in all walks of life, all genres, and they're looking for all opportunities. Owned by Mickey Mickelson, Creative Edge has the passion, the contacts, and the knowledge to help authors and other artists build their brand and get their work noticed. You can contact Mickey at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com to get started. Or you can go to www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge Publicity. It's your brand. It's your future.
And we are back with Bobby Jean Bell and, of course, Catherine Hudson, our guest for this evening. And that was our publicist, Catherine.
Yes. Our publicist, he's a man.
He's got, you know, he's got over 60 authors now.
I know. He has been, yes, expanding. And
yeah, and he said in his little meeting on Friday that he's going to have to stop now or get help.
Yeah.
He's saturated. He can't do anymore.
That's good. That means he's going to break through that ceiling.
real quickly, I'm going to ask you the question. Ooh. The name of this television show, what freaking network am I on? Name of this radio show is, I know, the name of this radio show is The Writer's Block, and there's a reason for that. Have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you get out of it?
Yes, I have. many, many, many times. I once had a 4-year writer's block. So that happened. Well, getting past that one is a whole different story for another day. But these days, because I write all day, every day, that's my job. writer's block, I think, in the way that most writers experience it, doesn't hit me in the same way. So, I mean, I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, I start writing at 5, and I write until 5. I do take breaks in there, but I'm writing from 5 to 5, and it has become more of a routine, more of a set schedule, more of more of work, I suppose, in that way. Not as in like, oh gosh, I'm working, because I absolutely love what I do and I couldn't be happier. But I've gotten into the rhythm of it. And I do definitely have my days where I don't want to sit down and write whatever's due in 12 hours or, right. You know, where I find myself slowing down and my word count maybe, you know, cut in half for one sprint. And the best way that I have found to deal with that is to just keep going. I'll get up, walk around the house, maybe fold some laundry or get a snack or, you know, step outside with the dog for 15 minutes and then come back to it and devote 15, 20, 30, 45 minutes to a sprint, whatever I'm feeling like I can handle at the time, and go for it. At this point now, I can write for, you know, an hour and a half to 2.5 hours straight and get anywhere between 4,000 and 6,000 words in that amount of time without stopping, which is awesome. And I trained myself by writing in sprints for 12 hours a day. and so really, really for me, it's just literally force the words onto the page. If they're not just flowing out, just keep plodding along and eventually the dam will break and it'll start coming out again.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a quick question. Do you work on more than one project at a time?
Always. It's at least four at any given time.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, I can't even keep my brain on one.
No. That's okay. I tell people not to compare themselves to me because it's like,
there's no comparison to you, Catherine.
Don't mean it like that, Jim. I mean it like I'm kind of a freak with like how I write, and I understand that.
And remember, you heard it here. Catherine is a freak.
That's gonna come back to bite me.
Well, you know, unfortunately we are out of time. So if you wouldn't mind giving our audience your email address and your website and where they can find you, Facebook, whatever you have going.
Yes, of course. I always love getting emails. That's at author@catherinehudsonfiction.com. My website is catherinehudsonfiction.com. All of my books are available there. And all of my books are also available on Amazon. I have a few series in Kindle Unlimited and a few series that are wide, so available on Barnes & Noble, Apple, Kobo as well. And I can be found on Facebook at Catherine Hudson Fiction, Instagram at Catherine Hudson Fiction, and Twitter at Exquisitely Dark.
Wow. So you're pretty much Catherine Hudson Fiction.
I'm not sure yet.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't you hang out for a few minutes? We'll do a little chatting after the show, let's get this done for tonight. We've got next week. We have an author that was on with us last August, Steve Berry. He writes about European stuff and World War II stuff, and he's got a couple series out, but his newest book is The Kaiser's Web, and he'll be joining us. Last time he was on, I was in the hospital, So I didn't get to talk to him, but this week, this one time we'll be able to. And of course, he's on next week. And I believe, if that, I'm not mistaken, is that not a Russ night? No, it's
no,
not.
It's the same.
And you have the book, right? You have the book.
I have the book.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's only 411 pages, Bobby. I expect you to read it today.
I'm not going to be able to start book two yet. I'm not going to be able to get back to book two, Catherine.
That's okay. Book three came out today, so you have lots of books.
Oh, my gosh. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
And your last one was December, right?
Yeah, the first one came out in December.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Wow.
So, yeah, don't go away. Right now, it's for Bobby Jean Bell and myself, Russ Avison, who is here every third Thursday, Ronan Rosner, and, of course, the owner of our station, Mr. Sam Hassan, and myself, Jim Christina. We are out of here.